Welcome to our podcast recording, where we'll be diving into an insightful conversation with three remarkable ladies, who are my colleagues here at CDH KAT Law LLP. I am Lydia Owor. I am a partner specializing in real estate law and real estate practice. Joining me are...
My name is Stephanie. Stephanie Wanjiri. I'm an associate in the corporate commercial department.
I'm Rizichi Kashero Ondego. I'm a senior associate in the corporate and commercial department.
My name is Nicole Mutunga. I am a trainee in the corporate commercial department.
Thank you, ladies. This podcast is a special part of our law firm's celebration of the International Women's Day 2024, themed Inspire Inclusion. And I need to get this right, so allow me to read. As we commemorate this day, we are honored to amplify the voices of women who are paving the way for greater diversity, equity, and inclusion. Inspire Inclusion serves as a powerful call to action to recognize, celebrate, and uplift the diversity of women's voices and experiences, and to provide equal access to opportunities and resources. So before we get started, ladies, let's just take a moment to shake off the nerves. Yeah, someone once told me that a good tongue twister works wonders in just easing the tension. So please indulge me.
Yeah.
Let's try this together.
Okay. I pass it on.
Yes. Think you can start with you, Nicole.
All right. My tongue twister is fierce females forge forward, fearless and fey. Bold women break barriers and blaze their way.
She made it look so easy.
Yeah. I have to go after that. Okay. Fierce females forge forward, fearless and fey. Bold women break barriers and blaze their way.
Okay. So I'll give it a try. Fierce females forge forward, fearless and fey. Bold women break barriers and blaze their way.
Wow. You made it so easy. So, all right. So now that we've warmed up, let's just jump into today's conversation. And I should mention that the panelists are from, you know, a diverse age group. So we are hoping to bring a diverse conversation, or diverse perspectives to the table. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, ladies, what is inclusion? What does it look like to you? What does it feel like?
Yeah. I can start. So for me, inclusion is embracing diversity. It's looking at people from all walks of life, from different cultures, different genders, different religions, and embracing the differences and making sure that they're included in all aspects of life, as difficult and as complicated as it may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and just to add to what Rizichi has said, for me, it also looks like progress because as we sort of go through generating more inclusion in life generally, and also in the workplace, the sort of categories that we've used to diversify what inclusion is have been growing. So once upon a time, it was just inclusion of women in the workplace. Now it's heading towards inclusion of indigenous communities and disabled people. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really excited about how things will progress in terms of inclusion.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and I think to add on that, as Nicole has said, the view of what inclusion is really expanding. And Kenya has been quite a bit on the forefront of making sure that they are aware of who needs to be included, who needs to be talked about, who needs a bit more special attention to make sure they're getting equal opportunities and that they're able to access that the same thing that everyone else has been able to access.
Mm-hmm. So I think I'm really proud of where we're going, all of us together.
So what I hear you say is seen, heard, valued.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
All right. So what are some of the barriers that hinder inclusion and how can we overcome them?
I think some of the barriers is one of the things that hinders inclusion is our unconscious biases. Mm-hmm. We've all been brought up in ways in which inform our lack of inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
And this needs to be taught out of people. A lot of training needs to be done to help people become more aware of their unconscious biases,
mm-hmm.
and how they can actively work towards including more people. And this could be women need to be in the kitchen, women don't, this is not a role for a woman,
mm-hmm.
or something like, for example, law is a male dominated field.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This unconscious biases is something that we really need to, that contributes to the lack of inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to add on to that, it's also, I think, an added element that is a lack of representation at the decision-making tables.
Yeah.
Who is there speaking for those who are not heard?
Mm-hmm.
Who is there saying, women can do this, highlighting women, the different skills that women have that, you know, can implement policies, can change the workplace. The lack of representation, even though I agree with you, there's progress, I still think there's a lot of work to be done in that,
mm-hmm.
in
yeah.
that area. Yeah.
And I think one of the things that adds to your point, Rizichi, is that there's a lot of bureaucracy in the progress.
Mm-hmm.
So in just looking at how decisions are made, who makes those decisions, it does tend to take a very long time
yeah.
to do these things through some of the formal mechanisms, and it tends to lag behind and requires a lot of effort from those misrepresented groups or underrepresented
yeah.
groups. So I do think that trying to sort of widen the table and ensure that more people are included does sort of help that.
Yeah. And in that way, it'll eliminate that unconscious bias that we have, because
yeah.
if someone is speaking about it
yeah.
and making you aware of that voice in your head that's stating that women should be in the kitchen.
Mm. Great. Maybe just to contextualize, what experiences have informed your understanding or perception of inclusion?
Okay, I think for me, some of the experiences have been more negative. So generally, it's generally where my opinion is undervalued or just disregarded entirely because I am a woman, and it doesn't really matter how much I do to sort of prove myself.
Yeah.
I feel like those are some of those experiences that I've had to learn from and just get some perspective on and just understand that a lot of the times you can't really educate somebody who's set fast in their ways.
Mm.
You can only educate those who want to learn and try and grow the table. So I think that's one of the experiences that have sort of formed my opinions.
Okay.
For me, it's being a mother. I'm a mother of two amazing babies. And it's sort of, okay, how do I phrase this? I've always been a career woman. I still am a career woman. And when I became a mom, there are these people coming to me telling me, oh, you know, you can't have it all. You know, you have to choose one or the other. And for me, that experience took me aback, being that I was raised completely differently. And people in our generation were raised to believe that we can achieve it all. But being a mother, I'm hearing a different mindset come to me and be like, you can't actually achieve it all. So what am I choosing? What am I giving up? Because I actually don't want to give up a lot of things. So that experience is, right now I'm going through it. It's helping me push that barrier. Be like, no, I don't want to listen to that voice. And to rather go into the unknown and try and achieve and succeed in both, no matter how hard it is.
You're talking about gendered expectations.
Yes, right? Yes.
Okay.
I think to what Rizichi has said, as a daughter of now, a career woman, somebody who really put her career forward, but also didn't lose sight of her family. She was able to play both roles really well. And your family learns to adapt to you and you adapt to your situation. And you don't have to settle into the norms that the society has put in for you.
Mm.
So she was a really big role model for me. And I think working in such an environment where we have people like Rizichi who are able to do it all, and being in a firm with a lot of female-led departments,
mm-hmm.
it's a really big inspiration in that despite the fact that the world is not inclusive or supportive of women and their careers and climbing the social ladder, it is being done and it is possible.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot of inspiration for all of us out there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting for me, when we talk about moments that shape my understanding of inclusion, I would say moments that garner significant attention just because it's a woman who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Like a woman inspecting a guard of honor. Oh my God. you know,
yeah.
Or a woman designed a motor vehicle, or, you know,
yeah.
You know, that would be a big deal. Or a woman holding a high rank in a military, you know,
yeah.
position. Those, you know, it just goes to demonstrate how much it takes to defy the norm.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the moments that really, you know, stand out for me. So how do your experiences as a woman dictate how you show up and express yourself at work? And I want to start with you, Rizichi.
I think women are amazing,
yeah.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
We have so many skills, different skills. We're juggling a lot, actually. And that ability to juggle us being mothers, sisters, daughters, and usually we have to play a lead role in these things, helps us also juggle a lot in the workplace. Those skills that we have at home can also be brought to the workplace. And I actually advocate that this thing should be added in the CV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your ability to, you know, be a mom, take your children to hospital,
yeah.
play, you know, do art, drop them to school, you know, be there for them emotionally. At the same time, you're recording a podcast,
yeah.
You're leading transactions. That juggling element takes a lot, and it's a skill that should be highly valued in women, and that can work well in the workplace.
And don't forget being nominated for...
Oh, yes. Young Lawyer.
Okay.
Young Lawyer of the Year. Yes,
yeah.
Last
yeah,
year.
Power to you.
It's
power to you.
Yeah, it's like a pat on my back, the hard work.
Yeah.
It's paid off.
Awesome.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I think our innate features, the femininity, the empathy that we have, and the ability to bring people together is really valuable in a workplace, in that you're able to deal with all different personalities in your team,
yeah.
and bring people together. So you become like a small family. Mm-hmm. And that's a role that women are able to play really well,
mm-hmm.
but also different people from different backgrounds. If you're able to pick someone from, I remember in university, okay, I came from a high school that was very like, we're all very one-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to university where there was a lot of different people from different cultures and backgrounds. And it was a culture shock for me, but I left there with so much knowledge,
mm-hmm.
and such different perspectives. And that's what inclusivity does. It allows you to have a lot more different perspectives, a lot more experience in your team, different skill sets being brought in,
mm-hmm.
and perspectives that could really grow your team or whatever work that you're doing or the space that... everyone is in.
I like that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask what collective feminine traits demand inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know we are all different personalities, you know, as individuals, but there must be a collective trait,
mm-hmm.
you know, that demands inclusion,
mm-hmm.
in respect to women. Nicole?
Okay, so for me, I think it's also been trying to reconstruct what I take as being a woman in the workplace, and trying to sort of do what Rizichi is doing very well, and try and have it, like, figure out how to have it all, how to have a family life and how to have a career. So I do think that it takes a good bit of work on your part to sort of decide how you want to do something and what you want to do. So I think that's the way it manifests for me in the workplace, because it's very easy to sort of slip back into some of these expectations that have been decided for you,
true.
And not really examine them and decide what works for you.
Yeah.
So I do think it takes a bit of self-reflection and trying to decide what is it that I want to bring that marks me as a woman. Because a lot of the time, you're sort of told to sort of stifle those parts if you do want to succeed. But I think you can have it all in that aspect, where you bring in what you want to bring in and what femininity and womanhood means to you.
Yeah.
You've actually made a good point, which actually leads me to the next question.
Mm-hmm.
What concrete steps or practical steps can women take to inspire inclusion?
Okay, so for me, I think the first thing is just creating the space to elevate and lift more women up.
Mm-hmm.
And not only women, other people as well. I do think it takes a lot of active work to sort of defy those expectations and to defy the norm. So it requires a conscious effort on our part.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us who are in the earlier stages of our career should be thinking about this. when we are in a position such as yours, Lydia,
mm-hmm.
to sort of create that space for women and to try and create channels for people to succeed. Even this podcast episode is sort of doing that in its own way by giving each of us an opportunity to speak
mm-hmm.
about this.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying once I manage to open the door, I need to keep it open.
Yes.
For you.
And
you're
maybe also, open a window
okay.
as well.
Yeah, you're also speaking to mentorship, I believe.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I wanted to speak on the element of mentorship. Having different types of women, I'll say different women from different backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
will help, you know, young people who are starting off in their career seeing where they want to head off to. Not everyone wants to be a mom, let's
mm-hmm.
be honest. Not everyone wants to be a partner.
Mm-hmm.
So having those conversations and providing the platform for someone to be open and to decide what they actually want for their life.
Without judgment.
Yeah, without judgment and understanding them and having policies that provide different aspects that allow
mm-hmm.
these people in their careers to grow, I think also.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. would help.
Mm-hmm.
I think just to add to what Rizichi has said, as a woman now who's made it to a point where her voice is being heard and she's being considered.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be important to now be the voice for those who are not yet there
mm-hmm.
and those behind you to make their path easier. So if it's implementing policies in the workplace or at a national level, the women who've made it to a point where they're heard should be the loudest voices. They should be shouting to make sure everyone else gets
mm-hmm.
the chances or the opportunities that they weren't able to get.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a question around the point that you've made in terms of, you know, but we can pack it for later. Because at this point, I just wanted to know which women inspire you in terms of their initiatives, what they're doing to inspire inclusion. Can you think of anyone?
There's a really young girl
mm-hmm.
called Greta Thunberg.
Mm-hmm.
And she is one of the loudest voices I've ever had. From
yeah.
such a...
Yes,
she's
yes.
one of the biggest proponents of... fighting against climate change
yeah.
and ensuring we maintain our environment. And she's not scared to speak her mind despite her age,
mm-hmm.
her gender, standing in a room full of people who have decades of experience on top of her. But
yeah.
she's making sure that her voice is heard and her opinions are heard and making a very big difference for everyone.
Sure,
so,
that's a good example.
Yeah.
She actually makes me question my youth.
Yeah. For me, it's Sirleaf, the first female president of Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first of all, let me start off by saying there are many women that I admire
yeah.
from all walks. But for her, it's the fact that she was the first president and she actually made an impact in the change when it comes to women and equality. And
mm-hmm.
she won a Nobel Peace Prize for that. She was vocal. She was
mm-hmm.
fearless. About being a woman, and she was a president as a woman. She didn't try to imitate a man.
Yeah.
She embraced her femininity and the fact that she was a mom and the fact that she was a wife and though she was divorced, it's
mm-hmm.
I really admire that. And the fact that, again, we say we can have it all, is that she's tried to achieve it all and she's doing it the best way that she can, and she's pulling up all women
yeah.
With her in that aspect.
Okay. For me, I think it would be Angela Merkel. Coincidentally, I also chose a politician.
Yeah.
But with politics being such a male-dominated space, it's very
Correct.
Hard for somebody to sort of make their own mark, because it's very easy for somebody to just write you off. But Angela Merkel was at the forefront of European Union politics for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
at the very least. So I do think that's sort of admirable, trying to one not only take up that role as the Chancellor of Germany, but also to succeed at such a level where she's recognized
mm-hmm.
even for her accomplishments now.
Mm.
Yes.
My woman of the moment is Gladys Wanga.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like she's doing a good job in terms of just proving that women in leadership can do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
We are now reading about the success of
yeah.
the event that's happening in Homa Bay. And I am from that county,
yeah.
and we are feeling her impact.
Okay.
We're very proud of that decision. So, yeah, she's my woman of the moment. I think
mm-hmm.
she's doing a good job in demonstrating that women can actually take leadership positions.
Mm-hmm.
So I started off by saying that the panelists are from different generations.
Are you going
yeah.
to say our age? I hope not.
But from different generations, and the idea was to bring bring diverse perspectives to the table. So let me just ask, is there any, do you think there's any value in intergenerational dialogue in the context of the conversation around inclusion?
I definitely do, because no person is a monolith for knowledge. Mm. So I do believe that the dialogue between people can make a huge difference in terms of what we know and what we can work on.
Yeah.
There are things that I could teach everyone here, and there are things everyone here could teach me.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that having these conversations and just also sometimes understanding the history behind some of these problems is very important, because you may try and do something, but if you've not consulted with somebody older than you, you might just do something that they know didn't work, or it's something that they know isn't feasible. So I do think that it is very important to sort of have those conversations amongst different generations and amongst different walks of life.
I think they usually say wise men learn from the experiences, and wiser men learn from the experiences of others.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to have conversations with those who've been in places where you want to go or doing what you want to do, so you can understand how they got there and what you can do to get there as well, or what different steps you can take to get where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's also for those who are ahead of us, or for those who are older or more experienced than us, for them to understand why we do what we do.
Yeah.
Sometimes you talk to people and there's such a generational gap.
Yes.
Just like, I don't know how to communicate
yeah.
to this person. But when you're open to speaking to the younger people, getting their ideas, they feel more valued, more included in decision making. And you're able to make decisions that are more relevant to them, and the trend follows. They'll make decisions that are relevant for those who are behind them as well. So
yeah.
it helps ignite the spark of inclusion, which will be replicated down the line as well.
Yeah, I agree. Listening to and speaking to young people like the Gen Zs, you get a completely different perspective as to how they view a certain issue and as to how you approach it. It might be a bit extreme, or it might be like, hey, I don't know if I can do that as a millennial, but it brings a fresh aspect into some of these issues. And having an older generation, a younger generation actually sit down and converse on these issues can bring new novel ideas as to how to tackle them.
True. So it helps connect the dots.
Yes.
It helps us learn from experiences and also project the future by understanding how your generation thinks and you know what we need to fight for in the future based on how we're progressing.
Yes.
Now, that's good. And also maybe just because you started by saying you're the daughter of, I hope I got it right, a corporate woman, so you've been able to watch, you know, right from home, how
to balance the two.
Yes.
And how to also conduct yourself, and that you don't lose yourself as a woman, but you're able to make a very big difference in whatever position that you hold.
Okay.
Yeah.
So back to the point that you raised, how can women have visibility? How can women who have visibility use their platforms to amplify unrepresented voices and promote inclusion?
I think speaking back to one of the qualities that women have is that we are able to have very real conversations with people, and people open up to us. So we should use that ability to go back and talk to those who are not included, those who feel unrepresented and unincluded, and be the voice for them if we can. So if it's as a trainee, you come in and you feel like something is happening to you, don't know who to talk to. As an associate or a senior associate, you should be able to come to us and be like, this is what I'm going through, this is what I'm feeling. And same with Lydia as a partner, I should be able to walk into your room, your office, and be able to voice the issues that I have. So having an open door, being willing to listen and taking action on the issues that you're seeing should be able to help foster that inclusion.
True.
What I just wanted to say is just do it, basically. One of the women that I admire, the ones who just took that step, applied for that job, spoke when they were not supposed to speak, acted when they were not supposed to act. Doing something, you don't know how it's going to impact someone who you don't even know that they're watching you.
Yeah.
So when you feel the fear of, I can't do this, or I can't speak up, I shouldn't speak up, knowing that actually just taking the step and actually doing it impacts a lot of women who are watching you, people from all walks of lives. Yeah, that's for me is my motto, just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I agree with Rizichi on the point that you do have to sort of be willing to take the steps. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should ever disqualify yourself from a room before you've even tried. Mm-hmm. Because if you decide to apply for that job or to speak at that conference or whatever it is that you might be afraid to take the first step, mm-hmm. it not only helps you in the future, but somebody else in the future could be looking at you and say, hey, she did this and yeah. it is possible. And that can inspire them to take their own future steps that may result in them being the first in their field yeah. or in whatever they choose to do. Yeah. So I do think taking that first step and also being unapologetic about it
yes.
is a very big thing that people with that visibility can do.
Yeah.
You're reminding me of a very famous woman in Kenya whose name I won't mention.
Mm-hmm.
But what you said, just do it. Her mantra is, do you, the world will adjust. Do you know this woman? She's very she speaks about life generally, her experiences
yeah.
as a woman, through marriage, through divorce,
yeah.
raising her kids. And you know, when you scroll through her comments, you can sort of like, you know, feel the male dominance coming out,
yeah.
the judgment coming out. But what I like about her platform is that she allows us to have those hard conversations, which makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really using her platform to force those conversations to happen. So I like that about her.
Who's this?
Okay. All right. So, yeah. So since we are having this conversation in the context of a law firm, are you aware of any policies in Kenya that promote inclusion?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you recommend any policies?
I know of the KEPSA has implemented a policy for equality when it comes to women in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks at embracing diversity and inclusion of women and encouraging organizations in the private sector to implement such policies. I've not heard much about it. I just know it was implemented and passed, but I thought that was very interesting in the sense that that's also what I'm passionate about. Creating policies and, you know, speaking and inciting conversations that encourages organizations to embrace inclusion and equality when it comes to women from different walks of life.
That's
yeah.
very good.
Yeah. I think we also have the youth and development policy
yeah.
that really focuses on including the youth when it comes to equal opportunities, when it comes to the workforce, including them when it comes to making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to creation of other policies and generally how the country is going. So recognizing them as a key player and decision maker in basically almost any other policy that's being implemented or regulation or law.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good step. Whether,
okay.
yeah.
Okay, for me, I had picked something very similar to Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
I had picked the youth division of the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so I do think that just sort of having people's voices sort of amplified and creating an official space for them is very important. I know in Australia that there's even a commission for future generations for people who can't speak up for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that just taking the steps to include more policies and more spaces where people can be represented is a very big step.
How about affirmative action? Do you think it's good for the country?
I think it's an important step. I can't
yeah.
really speak to its success. That's very arguable, but I do think that even just saying, hey, we should have this gender balance for both men and women is very important because a lot of the times we don't really think about those things until we're forced to.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not think about, hey, what's the age brackets that are in my firm? Or,
mm-hmm.
hey, what is the racial balance in my firm? So I do think that these policies do tend to think towards the future and their success will be seen over the long run because I don't know whether we've given enough time for it to take its course.
Yeah. it highlights what the problem is and where the problem is.
Yeah.
Basically, to summarize like what you're saying, it helps us focus on what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it may not be successful even now highlights a greater issue as mm-hmm. why is it not working? Why is it not successful? What do we need to do? So those it helps raise and bring up those conversations.
I think what might help it become more successful is for people to stop looking at it as a token system,
yeah.
in that we need to take a particular checkbox for, yeah, we have X ratio of women in our company, X ratio of people with disabilities, for marginalized communities, and view them more as, why do we actually need these people in our company? What values, what extra skill sets are they bringing in? So this might help the adoption or for people to see the value of affirmative action.
Yeah, that's interesting because I remember I don't know if you guys recall, but there's a time there was a very serious debate in parliament about the gender role. And some of the comments made there, you know, were about women being lazy, you know, what you're saying about the token system. You know, there's no need for affirmative action of the gender role because we have the ability, you know, to operate within the same space as men, especially in politics. Quite debatable. It was quite interesting to follow the conversations during that debate. But looking ahead, what do you envision as the future of inclusivity? And I want to start with you, Nicole. Because you're the future.
Okay, so for me, the future of inclusivity, I genuinely don't have a vision for it. Because I do know that my vision of inclusivity would be based on what I've experienced. It may not be a realistic portrayal of what needs to be done in the future. So I wouldn't really say I have a strong vision for it in terms of what needs to be done or who needs to be included. But I do know that there's a lot of room for growth and for us to sort of adapt to change, because a lot of the time change is happening around us and we may not be always willing to adjust. So I think just allowing that space for that growth and to adopt that mindset is very important.
Yeah. I see policies that are being implemented in the private sector that allow women to achieve what they want to do, when they want to do it, and how they want to do it. I know that's not going to be easy because it's several conversations at all different levels have to be had. And that's what I foresee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any thoughts?
My ideal future is that inclusivity should be easy and effortless and adaptable. The way Nicole has said, things are constantly changing. And we should be adaptable. Our policies should be adaptable to the changes that are happening. Corporate entities should be adaptable to those. And so should our policies. So that it doesn't take 10, 15, 20 years to see any effective change happening. People are suffering in between that period. So just cutting down the times, how long it takes for change to happen, for people to feel included, and for inclusivity to be so natural that it's not the biggest topic of debate.
I'm
hoping for a future where women will no longer have to discuss issues like the glass cliff. Or breaking the glass ceiling because it's so hard, you know, not being given positions, you know, let's talk about the glass cliff if you can, you know, the idea that mostly when a woman is allowed into a leadership position, there's a crisis, so you're already being set up for failure, and then, you know, the ultimate conversation around it will be, you see, women can't lead. But you are positioned for failure from the very beginning.
I think it's embracing the different skills that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're measuring women's skills and abilities against a man's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you measure it against that, that means we're not appreciating what women can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which means we're anticipating for her to fail. We're waiting for her to fail. But if we actually put both set of skills on the table and see how can we make it work? How can we make this leadership position work for her so she can bring the skills that are going to bring the change that a woman can bring?
Mm-hmm.
I think then the conversation of the glass ceiling will go. But now it's like we're doing comparisons between a man and a woman, or she'll be sick, or she won't do this, or she'll be too emotional about the situation. So, you know, she's going to be weak, she's going to be lazy. That's when, of course, we're going to feel if we're comparing the skills.
Yeah.
Let me throw in something else in that conversation.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about the comparison between man and woman. How about the comparison between the unmarried and married? You know, the woman who's taking care of a child,
yes,
and the childless woman.
Yeah. I mean, that's also a very tricky conversation to have, because it's expected for the childless woman who's going to perform better, or, you know, is going to be more available or more responsive than the woman who has other responsibilities at home. So how do you create a policy that ensures that the woman who has other responsibilities at home has the flexibility to still perform at home and at work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how do you ensure that both this woman or the woman who has more responsibilities or other responsibilities does not drop the ball at work?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the answer to that, you know, at the moment. And these are conversations that need, like I say, need to happen. We all need to sit down and discuss, this is what I need.
Mm-hmm.
And the person at that table and say, but I need this. So how do we meet in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
How can we make it work? Yeah.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
Any thoughts around that?
I think most of what I've been told about being a career woman, or let's just say in this profession, is that if you're in the legal profession, don't worry, you'll get married late. Don't be in a rush. When you then you have this, yeah, we've had this conversation. Or you have somebody on the other end who are just like, yeah, you just make sure you don't forget to have a family or anything like that. They don't go deeper to find out, is that what you want?
Yeah.
And also whether the workplace is conducive enough for you to be able to have the life that you want. So if I am to get married and get a child, is the workplace conducive enough for me to be able to bring up the child and still be able to perform at the same level as my peers? Am I being turned down for promotions because they're anticipating that, oh, now that you're married, you're going to get children, so they're not going to promote you so that you don't slow us down? And that's why it's important for the policies to be flexible and for policies to be in place that allows you, as Dizichi has said, for whoever has a child, whoever is a mother, to be able to work from home or in a flexible manner so that they are able to perform at the same level as whoever is still in the office or hasn't reached that stage yet.
Okay.
And I do agree a lot with what has been said by both of you, because even if you look at the US, where obviously a lot more statistical research is done, the gender pay gap doesn't really exist between unmarried men and women. It generally exists when a woman decides to have a family and has to take a sabbatical. That's where now the gender pay gap is really seen. It's and it's a very stark contrast. So trying to sort of deal with that expectation where you won't be getting promotions or you won't be considered for certain opportunities just because you are a woman who wants a family or who has a family, it's just, it takes a lot of conscious effort from the people ahead of you who are making those decisions to try and come up with a flexible schedule, to try and incorporate how can we accommodate you if that's what you want. And just trying to figure out in such like a very busy profession how to balance both, because it is a very delicate balancing act. And just having those conversations, I do think is very important. Yes.
Oh, well, this has been a very interesting conversation, ladies. But I'd like us to conclude by examining some of the common phrases that we hear.
Mm-hmm.
I'll mention a few, and with a yes or no answer, you can share your view on whether it contributes negatively or positively to the conversation.
Okay.
So the first one is, you throw like a girl.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Oh, sorry. Does it contribute negatively?
Yeah. So with a yes or no answer,
okay,
share your view on whether it contributes negatively or positively to the conversation. The
mm-hmm.
conversation around inclusion.
Inclusion. I think, yes, I throw like a girl.
Mm-hmm.
That's my skill. How? Yeah, that's my skill. I throw like a girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. Mm. I didn't expect you to see it that way.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is
let's embrace the fact that I throw like a girl.
Mm.
I may be able to do something else. You know, that for me, you're seeing it as a weakness. Again, it's a comparison of skill. You're comparing me throwing a ball to a man.
I get you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah, I do actually agree with that as well. That I throw like a girl. It's just like, yes, I am a girl.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to throw like a girl. That's what I am.
Yeah.
And just trying, like, it's never meant as a compliment. It's never, you run like a girl, you throw like a girl. It's never meant as a compliment. But it's a factual statement. I will throw like a girl because I am a girl. Yeah.
Correct.
That's good. That's good. Me too. No, actually the phrase.
Me too.
Yeah. Do you remember when it was trending?
Yes.
Yeah. What were your thoughts about it? Did that contribute to the conversation in a positive way or in a negative way?
I think it contributed in a positive way because it was women speaking out against men in such high power positions who took advantage of their positions to do whatever they wanted with whomever they wanted.
Yeah.
And women finally found their voice. And it started with one woman who paved the way for another and another and another, and all their voices were heard and action was actually taken due to a few people speaking up. So I think it contributed positively.
And I think it actually speaks to the question that we covered on visibility, how a woman who has visibility can use her platform, to inspire these conversations or to move these conversations, because these were high profile women, talking about the issues that they faced, So I liked it. I think it was a very positive move.
It gave women a voice.
Yes.
Yeah. I also think it highlighted a larger systemic problem. Yeah, I do think the fact that it showed that it was so widespread within certain industries, such as the entertainment industry, is a very good thing, because unless people talk about it, you may not know that the problem is there, even if people are suffering. And while high-profile women were speaking out about it, it also was still happening at that point to lower-profile women. So I do think it's very important.
Okay. The third one is think like a man, act like a lady.
Act like a lady, think like a man.
Yes.
Well, I think that statement was necessary for women to rise up the ranks. I'm talking from a corporate private sector perspective. For you to have been provided with a chance, or for women to have been provided with a chance to sit at the table, they had to think like a man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we have, even though there's some distance to go, we have enough women who can now help raise other women and bring them to such a position. So I want to challenge that statement and say, think like a lady and act like a lady.
Yeah,
we no longer need to think like a man to go up the ranks. That was necessary then, but now we've adapted.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have women in positions who can help others go up. And I just want to challenge women now, think like a woman and act like a woman.
I like that you switched, your perspective towards the end, because I was going to ask whether it contradicts
my previous statement. Yes, I know.
Because my view is that it limits authentic expression
as
a woman.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you, Lydia. I do think that it sort of tamps down on what you, like some of the negative traits that are associated with women, such as, I think Rizichi had mentioned, women being overly emotional and not being able to lead. So I do think it can sort of over-accentuate that. But I do think we're moving towards, as Rizichi said, think like a woman and act like a lady.
Yeah.
So it's no longer a point where it's just that, like, women are not able to analyze things in a way that a man would.
Yeah.
It's become abundantly clear that they can and that they are able to and are doing so.
Yeah. Another common one is women are their own worst enemies.
When it comes to mentorship and supporting each other, is that the statement?
No, it's a general statement that we hear.
Mm-hmm.
Women are their own worst enemies.
Again, it's using women's characteristics against them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's demeaning what I think are our strengths. we're not our own worst enemies. I think we, our skills are so, they're so special, they're so unique, they're so valuable. We just need to understand them. We just need to look at them and see how to capitalize on these skills, which we haven't done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's important to have mentorship and intergenerational conversations.
Yeah.
Because we're so different and so diverse, but women form the most tight-knit communities, friendships, and are the best in lifting each other up.
Yeah.
So we're not our worst enemies. We're actually our best uplifters. I would say it contributes negatively towards the conversation of inclusivity.
I think it does, because even I think very recently I had it, you know, repeated to me, but in a very subtle way, not expressly. But you know, even in the context of what we do, negotiating contracts, etc., if it's between two women, there's a possibility that someone will say, you know, we're not closing because
it's women.
I find it so negative. She's just hormonal.
Yeah, I hate that statement.
It's biases that you hear every time, like, oh, you get annoyed.
She's just hormonal. It means it's demeaning everything that you're saying or everything that you're doing. I think it has no basis at all. What factual basis are you making that statement on? How do you know I'm hormonal? How do you know what my emotions are? It's just to demean and to target.
I think it also dismisses whatever you're feeling or your reaction. I think it's a very big way for to sort of detract from like the valid points that you may be making about a situation and say, oh yeah, she's just hormonal, it doesn't really matter. But it does matter, because these are things that are important. And just by dismissing the situation doesn't mean that my feelings around it are any less valid. I think it just detracts from the conversation and tries to detract any merit in what a woman may be saying.
It completely deflates me when I hear someone say she's just a model. You know, the last one is, that's not very ladylike.
I mean, you never hear anybody say that's not very manly to a man. I think being a woman and being a feminine person is individual. It's very different between me, Nicole, and Rizichi and you. So it's generalizing everyone into one packet and telling you have to act a certain way. But I'll express myself differently from you and from anyone else. So it's just putting all women into one box, and all women have to act in a particular way.
I agree with you. I do agree. Because womanhood means something for me, and the definition doesn't have to be the same for everybody else. I can sort of decide what femininity means to me, what womanhood means to me, and how I choose to express it. So saying it's not very ladylike sort of takes away from that choice for me.
All right.
Are there any other phrases you know that you completely disagree with? Men would be men. No, I'm pushing it.
I don't think you're pushing it. I do think that, boys will be boys and men will be men. I think it sort of tries to detract from the accountability for their actions, because you'll never hear that being used in terms of women or girls. I've never once heard somebody say girls will be girls. You're sort of supposed to take a responsibility for your actions and actually acknowledge that the impacts, positive and negative, from your actions. So I do think that it sort of just dismisses any responsibility and tries to not hold people accountable for their actions, even if they should be.
Okay, great. So I think I loved this conversation. There's a lot to learn, and I think we should continue doing what we can in our capacity to amplify the voices who you know, take initiative toward inspiring inclusion. Thank you so much. I think we should continue this conversation. We should continue having roundtable conversations toward the mentorship that you're talking about, because there's a lot to learn and there's a lot to unpack, you know, for all the generations. Yeah, so at this point, I think we will conclude, unless you have any last words.
Let me say thank you, Lydia, for, you know, encouraging us to come here and speak, to hear different points of views from these amazing colleagues. It's just thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
So we can try the...
Yes.
Inspire
inclusion.
Yes. Inspire inclusion.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.